Military leaders and many in the political and contracting realm worry the nation is losing its competitive military advantage. The Commission on National Defense Strategy has called for a boost in spending, not an uncommon Washington response. My next guest argues maybe this is not the right conclusion. Dan Grazer is a military fellow at the Project on Government Oversight and a Marine Corps veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan, and he joins me now. Dan, good to have you on.
Hey, thanks. It is great to be here.
First of all, the basic premise of the report. Would you agree that the United States does need to increase the edge that it had in the 80s and 90s?
I don't necessarily agree with the entire premise of the commission, because their premise is that we should be focusing on great power conflicts, i.e., focusing on fighting a conventional war against Russia and China. I don't think that that's necessarily the right policy. But even within that premise, just accepting that premise for argument's sake, the conclusions that the commission came up with contain an inherent logical fallacy in that if Russia and China are gaining on us in a military technological sense, they've been able to do that by spending pennies to our dollars. We spend, even under the most generous accounting methods, we spend twice as much as Russia and China do on our military, but yet they're somehow able to gain on us. So I think rather than just throwing more money at the problem, we should probably take a lesson from them to figure out how they've been able to build a world-class military by spending pennies to our dollars.
Could it be, and this probably sounds naive, but are prices lower in China because they have much lower labor costs and so forth?
Well, they definitely, that's one of the arguments that's made. If you listen to the co-commissioners for this panel, they will tell you that the big disparity is the personnel costs, and that is very true. It does cost much more to field, put an American in the field than it does to put a Russian or a Chinese soldier. But even accounting for that, if you just let's just compare apples to apples here. Let's take a look at our premier fighter jet. So you look at something like the F-22 or the F-35, and again, being generous and just using the Air Force's figures for these things, where you're talking about approximately $140 million for an F-22, and they're shooting for a target price of about $80 million for the F-35. Which again, the real costs of these programs are much, much, much more expensive than that. But even just taking those numbers, comparing them to the comparable, the Russian Su-35 and the Chinese J-20, those comparable systems cost half of what ours do. And so they're obviously, they've figured out a way to build these things for a lot less money than we have. And so maybe we need to, again, take a lesson from them and figure out how to do that.
Sure. Again, a little bit of a devil's advocate question here. Could it be that they are up on these types of technologies, fighter jets and the networking they require, because they stole our intellectual property and got a shortcut?
That is very true. Yes, yes. The Chinese, if you believe all the reports, they stole pretty much everything that they needed to know about the F-35 back in 2006. So, yeah, there's definitely some industrial espionage that goes on. I still think that there is definitely a way to build effective systems for a lot less money than we have. A better policy would be to build better systems so we can build more of them. To follow the commission's recommendations, they quote the old adage that quantity has a quality all of its own, which is very true, and I agree with that. But there's also another old adage that says, old New England adage that says you can't get there from here. Well, we're not going to be able to do that when, in reality, we're spending approximately $350 million for an F-22 and about $150 million per copy for an F-35 if you account in all the program acquisition unit costs that go along with it.
And just to return to an earlier point that you made, that you questioned the idea of the emergence of the great power competition. And that's really become military doctrine, and that's the basic thinking that they all have now. Is that the way the world is, do you think?
I very much doubt it, because while the report says talks a lot about modernizing nuclear weapons, which I tend to agree with, it mostly focuses on a conventional war against Russia or China. And I still think that it is a very dicey proposition that two nuclear powers can fight a conventional war.
We're speaking with Dan Grazer. He's military fellow at the Project on Government Oversight. I wanted to ask you about the personnel costs. We touched on that briefly, but The volunteer force is expensive. I think it was former Secretary Gates said that healthcare costs are eating us alive, was his terminology for it. I don't see a way around that at this point to have any kind of, say, an army of 500,000, of which half of that is ready at any given time. It's simply expensive on the personnel front, which outstrips the rising costs of some of the systems.
That is very true. But it's also important to remember that a lot of those costs are spread on through other departments, because you have to look at, like, the when we talk about military spending, a lot of when I spoke earlier about the most generous accounting methods, I was talking about just comparing base budget to base budget. But a lot of these kind of costs are also spread in other departments. So if you add in the Veterans Administration and you add in the Homeland Security and things like that, our true spending on defense is much, much greater. We're talking over easily over $1 trillion a year. And so it is a great challenge to try to fund all of these things, which is why it becomes even more important for our policy leaders to identify savings wherever they can. And I always go back to the most important thing is we need to figure out a way to build much simpler weapon systems that can come in at much lower costs. It is not entirely unreasonable to think that the United States can do exactly like Russia or China does and build a $40 million fighter plane. Because we're not going to be able to afford the size of a force that the Commission and Congress is calling for when we're spending $350 million for a fighter plane, when we're spending $18 billion for an aircraft carrier. The math just does not add up.
Sure. And on the question, getting back to the, say, we're not a great power competition situation, it is more like what it's looked like for the past, 15 years or so, or since 9/11. Given that as the standard situation, would you say that the United States still needs to boost up its technical superiority? That is to say, has that eroded even in a non-great power versus great power situation?
I would say it's more important for us to really try to evaluate what it is that we're trying to accomplish with these systems. So technology is really great in a lot of situations, but there are plenty of situations where the high technology road is not the right way to go. And it's a very important thing to really kind of focus and see what it is that you're trying to accomplish, because for every high-tech weapon system there's a very low-tech counter to it. And so we need to make sure that we're not setting ourselves up for a less wealthy adversary to come in and defeat a $150 million aircraft with a $1,000 rifle or something like that. I think that we need to really go back to the basics and really focus on the true essence of these systems and to figure out the simplest possible way to achieve that desired goal.
I always wondered why they just didn't go back and say, let's order 1,000 F-18s and be done with it.
That's a great question. We could do the same thing with like the A-10. Like, look, we have the designs for them, and so we can, if they need to be modified, I mean, the A-10's been upgraded a couple times, we could just build more A-10s. But a lot of times you don't even necessarily need to do that. I point to the example of the new tank upgrade program. Now, this is my background. I was a tank officer in the Marine Corps, and I went through a couple of different kind of generations of the Abrams. When I first came in 2005, we were operating on tanks that were almost exactly like the ones that we took to Desert Storm in 91, and then they got upgraded about 2 years into it. And the upgrades were impressive, and we had optics that I could look out further than I could before, and there were a couple of new electronics for location and land navigation and those kind of things. And some of those were very good upgrades, but others, when I really kind of took a look at it and I was able to reflect on it, I realized that I can't do anything in this tank that I wasn't able to do before. I could still hit targets out to the same exact range. The only real difference with that was the image of the target in my viewfinder was clearer than it was before. That was the only real difference. But there was a big cost associated with that. And that was for a relatively basic upgrade for the tank. The new one that the Army's doing, the M1A2 STEP version 3, it's approximately a $22 million upgrade for a tank. It's not buying a new tank. It's just an upgrade for a new tank. And in many ways, this upgrade is actually going to make the tank less capable. It's going to add more weight, which is going to give it shorter legs, means you have to refuel it more often. It actually eats into the fuel capacity of the tank, which means that you've reduced its range even more. You've actually made it harder to move it around in a strategic and operational sense, because there are very few bridges around the world that can traffic an 80-ton tank. And so this looks very good to the bottom line for General Dynamics and some of the other contractors that are involved in it. But in reality, they're really providing a less capable tank. And so this is I use this as a great example of going back and making sure that people understand what is the true essence of this system. What is it that we need to do? And is this new upgrade program or is this this new way of doing things actually improving the situation that we currently have?
Dan Grazier is the military fellow at the Project on Government Oversight. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Find a link to more information and to this interview at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to the Federal Drive at Apple Podcasts or Podcast One.